And then when did Sean Payton tell you in the half, hey, we're doing onside kick to start the second half?
Literally with like 5 minutes, because, you know, obviously the halftime is 30 minutes or whatever. It's a lot longer in the Super Bowl. Like 5 minutes before we go out, he's like, we're doing ambush. Everyone's like, oh my God.
Hey everybody, what's up? Trey Wingo here with Chase Daniel. Welcome to Chasing It on the 33rd Team. Glad you're with us. Chase, the news in the NFL never stops. That's why I say there's not an offseason. There's not an offseason. There's the regular season. There's the postseason. There are what we are now the player procurement and rule change season. And then we have the training camps and preseason. So there's no offseason, right? So we just had the NFL owners meetings in Orlando. Side note, my favorite thing ever is Andy Reid in the head coaching picture with the Hawaiian shirt. And by the way, the
best tradition.
It's the best. And also just the cankles that he wears in the short. When the cankles come out and where the calves and the ankles meet, Andy Reid is defending that title, most outstanding cankles, as well as two Lombardi trophies. But we do have some changes in the rules we want to get to. One I love and two I hate. So let's start with the one I love, which is basically bastardizing the XFL kickoff in an attempt to have more kick returns be a part of the game. Because I think it was like 4% of kicks were returned last year, or some very low number, right? So the people that don't know, basically what we're doing is the kickoff will still come at the same place, but the two teams, the kickoff team and the kick return team, outside of the kicker and the deep man to receive the kick, will line up 5 yards apart from each other, I think, on the 40 and 35 or 35 and 30 yard line of the the team receiving the ball, and that ball goes in the air. Neither of those two lines of men can move until the ball enters the target zone or is touched by the receiver, the kick receiver. What are your initial reactions on the rule? Because I think this is fantastic.
Yeah, initial reaction was I was in Cabo when I saw it, so I saw it late, and I really just didn't even think about it till my flight back, so that's why I'm bronzed. And you don't. I'm not going to take my shirt off right now, Trey, but I will say I've gotten more sunburnt than I've ever gotten. Like, I'm like a red piece of paper. It hurt. Every inch of me hurts. So that's why I'm just staying really still right now. But I digress. Why? Just put some sunscreen on, dude. Like, what are you doing? Anyway, the first thing I think that I thought was like, that you're going to see more offensive linemen on kick return because it's really just becomes like a pass rush lane of a 5 yard head start. And on the kickoff team, you're going to see more linebackers and DBs. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic. You're going to see so many different courses of action by these special teams coordinators in the preseason. They're going to practice the hell out of it in training camp. But I do think you'll see more offensive linemen. And I don't think it's just going to be like, hey, it's 10 on 10 or it's 9 on 9 at the front line. Like, you're going to see a lot of pin and pull plays. You're going to see a lot of reverses because it's really just a line of scrimmage play now. And it brings one of the best, most exciting plays in football, in my opinion. Like, when I'm on the sideline, I'm watching, it brings it back because everyone was like, oh, we're just going to kick it off. It's going to go through the end zone. Like, I was a part of multiple different rule changes. I'm a proponent, though, of like keeping the game the same. Now, there has been a lot of tweaks to the kickoff return and kickoff rule, but it's just with player safety in mind. And I think the biggest issue with that is you have a 50-yard head start, right? Why they changed it in the first place, and you are just wedge busting. And then then you can't have a three-person wedge, and you have a two-person wedge. So I get it. I'm a purist at heart, though. But I do think you're going to see – I mean, special teams coaches are going to get their money's worth now. And you're going to see some pretty interesting plays, just like we saw in the XFL when they were doing it, like some of these reverses, some of these throwbacks. And, when I see special teams coaches coaching kickoff – they always say, just stay in your lane. Just stay in your lane. Just stay in your lane. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when you have 9 guys across 53 in a quarter or a third yard. And are they going to like make a – it's just going to be interesting. So the strategy behind it, there's so many different ways you could go about it.
Here's what I love about this rule, okay? It makes the kickoff an actual play again, all right? We had the same thing when the PAT was from the five-yard line, right? It wasn't a play. It was 99% successful across the league, 98%. When they moved the PAT back 15 yards, one of the greatest rule changes in the history of the NFL.
I agree.
I mean, think about the games that have been changed because of that. The 2015 AFC Championship game between the Broncos and the Patriots when Peyton went to his last Super Bowl, Super Bowl 50. The difference in that game was a missed extra point from Steven Gostkowski in the first half. I mean, that was the end up being the difference in the game. We saw the kick in this past Super Bowl when the kid out of Michigan for Jake Mooney, Money Mooney, Mooney, is that what his name is? Mooney?
Yeah.
Whatever his name is. Yeah, Mooney. You know, he line-drived one, and it was blocked. That ended up being the difference between the Chiefs needing a touchdown or a field goal to send the game to overtime. So it made it an actual play again. What I like about this rule change is it's going to make a kickoff an actual play again. And it's going to give players whose specialty is kick returning much more incentive to be signed and utilized. I mean,
Cordarrelle Patterson?
I think Cordarrelle Patterson going to the Pittsburgh Steelers, brilliant. And by the way,
genius.
I really like what the Pittsburgh Steelers have done this offseason.
They've had a
maybe that's
season.
For a different show. We'll talk about that separately. It makes it a play again, okay? And I understand the player safety part, so we agree on that. Now, the other two rules I cannot stand. The first one is the onside kick can no longer be a surprise onside kick. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in the history of the world. It's the stupidest thing. Why are you doing it? And my favorite part is it was special team coaches who proposed it. It's like, hey, man, we don't want to have to deal with this shit, all right? Yeah. We don't want to have to prepare for this stuff. Like, two of the greatest plays in the history of the Super Bowl were surprise onside. Super Bowl 30, when the Pittsburgh Steelers scored and they kicked off to the Cowboys and they surprised onside. Bobby April was their special teams coach. And Bill Cowher said, I'm not leaving anything in the bag. They went down, scored, cut it to a three-point game. The Cowboys held on to win. Blah, blah, blah. But it made it a game again. And you were on arguably the greatest play in Super Bowl. Surprise onside to start the second half in Super Bowl 44. And it changed everything because the Chiefs tried – I mean, excuse me. The Colts tried to run out the clock at the end of the first half. You got the ball back and scored. And then when did Sean Payton tell you in the half, hey, we're doing onside kick to start the second half?
Yeah, so we called it ambush. Thomas Moore said it was a rookie that year, which a lot of people don't understand. It's like, first of all, you have a rookie place kicker and a rookie punter who –
by the way, still going with the Jets, by the way.
Yes, still going. Like we call him the leg. That's literally his nickname. He got it. He's like – In a team meeting, like as a rookie, they're like, what do they call you? And he was like, he literally said, the leg. So we just made fun of him the whole year, but then it ended up being fine when the leg kicked the ambush. But when we went into the locker room, we didn't feel like we were moving the ball. We felt like we wanted to steal possession. And Sean, literally with like 5 minutes, because, you know, obviously the halftime is 30 minutes
takes
or whatever.
Forever.
It's a lot longer in the Super Bowl. Like 5 minutes before we go out, he's like, we're doing ambush. Everyone's like, oh, my God. Okay, because we had seen Thomas Morstead practicing that kick for the entire year, and it's insane. It just spins like a top, like an old school top. It goes 10 yards, and it comes back. And we had seen him, like, do it to perfection. Like, I'm saying, like, just crosses 10, maybe get to 10.5 yards, and spins all the way back to 5 yards. Well, this one, it actually hit somebody, so it didn't really spin. I think it hit Hank Basket.
And it spun
and didn't go back five, but luckily we were able to get it. But it just shows you, like, the surprise onside kick thing. I mean, it stinks. Like, it is a way to steal a possession. And my thing is, like, not only that type of onside kick, where in the world are the ones that are going to be like, hey, kicker, you see this big, fat offensive lineman right here that can't move, that turns his back directly when the ball's kicked. I want you to hit him right in the back. And you've seen that, like the peg kick. Like,
absolutely.
I'm pretty sure Pat McAfee has done it before and all that stuff. Or, like, the surprise kick where McAfee, literally, there's no one in the middle. He just kicked it 10 yards, went to go grab it. So it just – obviously, with the new kickoff change, the kicker's standing all by himself on the opposite 35 or 40-yard line, and everyone else is down in the opposing territory. So it's impossible to do it. But it's just – I don't know. I mean, look, the onside kicks are going to be – you just say, hey, we're doing an onside kick. I'm like, oh, man. Like, you know, it's one of those things that purist, I wish they would not have gotten rid of.
Well, here's the part where I really have an issue with it, because one of the things for kickoff, they want to put kickoffs back in the game, but they also are concerned about player safety, right?
Yeah.
So when you tell people it's okay to go on the side, now you have people flying at each other 10 yards trying to hit the crap out of each other.
Yeah.
You know? So that doesn't make any sense. And then the other one that we have to get through is the hip drop tackle, which, by the way, just so you know, hip drop tackle is a fancy term for something called a tackle.
It's just a tackle.
All right? It's just a tackle. And it became a thing when guys like Tony Pollard and other people got injured. You know, obviously Geno Smith got injured with one.
Mark Andrews.
The Mark Andrews play. But if you look at that Mark Andrews play, okay?
It's really not. Like,
how else is Logan Wilson going to tackle him? Mark Andrews has the ball. He's separated from him. And Logan has to dive to get him. And in doing so, to dive and try and bring him to the ground, his body falls on Mark Andrews' legs and ankles, and that created the injury. That's just a tackle. Like, yeah. There are certain situations where you have no other way to bring that player to the ground. And you can't hit him in the head. You don't want to hit people low to blow out their knees. So you try and wrap around the waist and pull them down to the ground. I get it. There are certain ones that are egregious. The kid that was Cleveland Furl, when he was it Furl or for the Jacksonville Jaguars, when he twisted Mahomes in the playoff game.
Yeah,
that,
I forgot you know what I mean? And, yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, that was bad. I get that. But most of these examples we're seeing are literally tackles. What are they supposed to do if you're playing defense?
Well, I mean, tackle. And yeah. I get, like, I feel bad. I feel bad for defensive players. And you saw, as soon as it got banned, first of all, you saw the NFLPA come out and say, like, we unanimously, like, do not want this to pass. Like, it's just a tackle. And then you saw, like, guys, like, some of the best defensive players, like Cam Jordan, J.J. Watt, they're all coming out. Like, what are we supposed to do? The game has already trended and is trending more to an offensive game because everyone loves points. But at the end of the day, like even being a quarterback, like, you got to protect our guys. But it's becoming flag football. It's becoming flag football, and it's like, how are you supposed to tackle?
That was J.J. Watt's tweet. That was J.J. Watt's tweet. Go ahead and put flag on
it. Go ahead and put flag on it. It really is like flags. And I think what this rule, it's going to have a little bit of unintended consequences. And what I think it's going to happen is, instead of you deciding to wrap up around the waist, you're going to have to go low. Like, if you're trying to be in the spot that Logan Wilson was when he was trying to go and tackle Mark Andrews, like, you just have to go low, and you're going to see blown out knees. You're going to see blown out ankles. Like, it's just something to, like, how else are you supposed to tackle if you're to the side or behind the guy? You got to go low, and you can't go high. It's a horse collar. And so I also feel like it's probably not going to get enforced a lot because it's going to be hard to call. Because it's like in the middle of the moment, like, you're going to see it. I think they should make it reviewable. Like, is it really a hip drop tackle? Like, how do you know? How do you teach these refs, which aren't full-time refs, by the way? They all have lawyer jobs. How do you teach the refs how to enforce it?
Well, that's the other part. Like, we all think the refereeing in the NFL is not great, and now we're adding more to their plate. Like, how is that going to work? And the other thing about this, and I want to make this point extremely clear. Why are we trying to make a game that is inherently unsafe safe?
Yeah.
Why are we trying to do that? Okay. You play football. It's like when you play football. It's like when you sign up to play to box or go into the octagon in an MMA fight. You know what you're signing up for.
Yeah.
It is inherently dangerous. And my friend Mark Schlereth had a great point on his radio show in Denver. He's like, we all sign up for this. We accept it. We do it because it's what we love and it's how we like to play, and we like the physical violence that's in the game. I can't tell you how many offensive linemen have told me over the years, what I love most about playing football is that I get to physically abuse another man for 3 hours and I can get away with it legally. There are things you can do on a football field that if you did that in any other walk of life, you are in big trouble. So for these offensive linemen who never get a chance to do anything, you know, like score or touch the football, when they can move another man against his own will and ragdoll him for three hours on a football field, there's no greater feeling. And that's basically physically abusing another human being. So why are we trying to do this to make a game that is inherently unsafe safe for people who, by the way, according to Stink, which is a great line, who don't give a shit about the game anyway? Like, 70-something of the top 100 rated shows in television last year were NFL football games.
Football.
You had in college football, You added college football, I think it's 90-something of the top 100 were either NFL or college football. It's popular. People like it the way it is. I understand some of the things for player safety, but why are we trying to placate this small group of people who don't freaking like the game anyway? They don't like it anyway. So why are we trying to think that we care so much about them when the majority of people are already there and are enjoying the game? It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And speaking of like the top 90 shows being some type of football, how about NFL saying that they're going to play games on Christmas? And oh, by the way, not just any Christmas, it's on a Wednesday.
Wednesday. We
are every single day of the week this year
except Tuesday.
But like, is this something you think could like continue? Because you were at ESPN, you were part of some of those conversations. It's like, man, I understand it's a money play, but like you're taken away from the NBA. The NBA can't be happy about it. You got Thursday, Friday is the opening game in Brazil on Peacock of all places. Yeah. Like all this stuff, it's wild. It's wild, wild west, man.
The ratings for the three Christmas Day games this year were insane. The NFL basically just posterized the NBA and dunked on them and said, oh, that's so cute. That's adorable. You thought you guys owned Christmas? Please. We own Christmas and you are never, ever getting it back. That's basically what they said. I think if you combined all the Christmas Day games on the NBA, they didn't come up to one rating of one of the NFL football games
on
Christmas Day. I mean, the NFL is, you've heard me say this a million times. The NFL is really good at two things, making money and dominating our attention. Yes. And they just found another way to dominate our attention with these Christmas Day games. They are never going away. Never go away.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be crazy to see how, so they're bidding these out to different networks, whether it's Amazon or CBS or NBC. Like, it's going to be interesting to see how much money these major companies are willing to shell out, because it's going to be a lot. Like, it's going to be a lot of money.
It's the surest thing in viewing. It is the surest thing in viewing. People will watch. You know, and the Amazon's going to have exclusive wildcard games now, too.
They got a wildcard, yeah. Right? It's just like
they get a wildcard game. Look, you know, Roger said at the Super Bowl, we fish where the fish are. And that's what they're doing. So it's another.
It's just a matter of time before the Super Bowl is on a streaming platform. Like truly, like cable is going obsolete. All these DTCs, these direct to consumers, like you know, Goodell came out the other day and was like, not a couple days ago, at the owners' meeting. He's like, yeah, it's no foreseeable future. Well, you didn't say never. You didn't say never. Like it's gonna go and it's gonna get 225 million people to watch it. It's just crazy,
I love
bro.
It. In the foreseeable future, which means I'm only looking at next
week.
You
didn't say no.
That's my seeable future. I have looked all the way to next week, and that's not the future I'm having in it. Okay. Next up, obviously, is the draft. We've done the quarterback issues and the quarterbacks that are in the draft. This is a wide receiver-rich draft, deep draft at wide receiver, which, by the way, is why I think the market for a lot of these wide receivers was deflated this year. I'm still shaking my head at the Calvin Ridley deal. Like, you gave him how much? What did
Tennessee,
you do?
Tennessee, man.
Whatever. I mean, I hope it works. But, man, when you see what Tyreek has done in Miami and what the impact Devontae has had in Vegas for the Raiders, obviously there's some issues there. But, like, okay, if you want to give Calvin Ridley this money, go for it. So let's talk about some of these wide receivers. The recent 33rd team mock draft has Marvin Harrison Jr. going number 5 to your old team, one of your old teams, the Chargers. Do you think he's the best receiver in this draft?
Oh, man, I think it's close. I think it's between him and Malik. We'll get to Malik later. I do think Marvin is just an overall, and we've been talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. for 2 to 3 years now. Best receiver in the draft. Like, everyone knows the bloodline, all that. When I watch him, like, he's just a freak of nature. He's got insane size. He's sort of built, Trey, like a power forward. But he can also run really quickly. We don't know how quickly he can run because he decided, you know what, I'm just too good. I don't need to run at the combine. I don't need to run at my pro day. He's probably more physical than any receiver in this draft class, just pure size. And the thing that sticks out to me when I watch his film, he's just really good versus press coverage. He's a lot faster than you think. I would love to get a 40 on this guy. I don't think there is one. I don't think he needs to do one. He understands he's probably going to be the first receiver taken. And it's an interesting pick if the Chargers, stay at 5. Because there's a lot of different, and you heard Jim Harbaugh say it, there's a lot of different scenarios and situations where, and I think this could be the case, is that the quarterbacks go first 4 in a row. And I do think that that's would be the best pick for the Chargers possible because they don't need a quarterback. They got Justin Herbert. So you get quarterbacks go 4 in a row with J.J. McCarthy is likely moving up draft boards and he's probably going to be – it just depends who trades for him. It just depends who trades for him. But the Chargers can do whatever they want. Do they take Joe Alt, a tackle? Do they take a receiver? And that receiver, in my opinion, would be Marvin Harrison Jr. It all depends what the Arizona Cardinals do, who's selecting for. Do they trade back? Do they not? It's all, going to be up in the air. But I do think this is one of the best receivers we've seen in a long time. The word I like to use is generational.
Wow, generational for Marvin Harrison Jr. You mentioned the Arizona Cardinals. Well, in the latest mock draft on the 33rd team, they do make the trade. They have the Giants move up to select J.J. McCarthy at number 4, which pushes the Cardinals back to 6, and they take Malik Nabers there. And by the way, who's bawling on his pro day as we tape this?
4-3-4, Malik Nabers, 4-3-4, 4-4, 0 at his pro day. He's jumping out of the roof. I think his broad jump, his vertical jump, he's 42-inch vertical. He's third among all 24 receivers that were at the combine. Tested out of this world. But I go back to just his film, right, Trey? Like, he's one of the better receivers in this class, and I think this is why you're hearing this stuff on social media and why people around NFL circles are like, this guy is truly challenging Marvin Harrison Jr. Everything I've heard, it's like, yeah, it's not as far-fetched to see Malik actually go one. I think Malik's game translates a little bit better for what they did at LSU into a pro-style offense. He's the best, not even close, he's the best receiver in the draft class at releases. He's 6 foot. He measured at 199 pounds. And when he gets going, Trey, like, he's shot out of a freaking cannon. Insane route runner. He's put multiple DBs in the films that I've watched in a blender, just like literally break their ankles. And something that separates him, I think, from Marvin Harrison Jr. and really everyone else in this class is he can play in the slot. He's just not your typical X and Z receiver. He can do it, and that's probably where he's going to fit. But I just watch him and Jaden Daniels connect on these slot fades over and over and over again, and not even versus man coverage, his feel versus zone, everything like that. And then everyone wants to talk about like yak, right? It's run after catch or yards after catch. He's really good in space, and he's got a really good feel, and obviously like the afterburners are for sure, but in zone and in man, he's really good at those routes. That's why I think these people are really liking, and I say these people, these NFL circles are really liking what Malik Nabers does. Does this pro day vault him up to that number one spot? I mean, I really do think it's a decision that's not going to be taken lightly and has probably yet to still be made.
Obviously, there are things that are going to be really good there. The next wide receiver coming up is Romeo Dunze going number 9 to the Jaguars with a trade from the Chicago Bears. Your thoughts there?
I don't want the Chicago Bears to trade this pick because I think Romeo Dunze with Keenan Allen and the DJ other guy Moore. They got there, DJ Moore. And Cole Kmet and Caleb Williams, presumptive number 1 pick, like they got themselves an offense. And I think Rome, he plays above the rim. He's the best 50-50 ball winner. He has the upside, honestly, to be one of the best receivers in the class. And you saw it last year with his quarterback. What's the guy out of Washington? Oh, my God, I'm blanking.
Penix?
Quarterback. Yeah, Penix Jr. Yeah, see, he's not being talked about enough. That's why I'm blanking on him because I'm so with the other guys. But you saw it with Michael Penix Jr. When he would throw up these balls, like he was double, triple covered sometimes. He has the above-the-rim power to make all the catches. His hands, that's what separates him. So I've seen everything that separates like Malik and Marvin Harrison. Rome's hands, you rarely see him drop a ball. He's got big hands. He led the FBS with receiving yards, almost 1,700 receiving yards last year. And that's the biggest thing, right? The 50-50 ball winner, he led the FBS with 21 contested catches. So he reminds me of a bigger, like just swoller and stronger Mike Williams. Like the dude can go up and play. He's faster than a Mike Williams. I don't know if he's the most athletic receiver in the draft class, or he's gonna like beat you in a just a straight line race. But if a guy wants to get into a slot, like the route running ability reminds me of like a Marcus Colston, where we used to throw these slot post routes to him in New Orleans, paired with a Mike Williams. I think he's better than that. He's got the upside. I think it would be great to pair him with Chicago. I know we got the trade, but I think he would be a really good weapon if Chicago's stuck in pick at number 9.
Yeah, you would think that unless they get a haul there, they want to. I mean, like Caleb Williams is going into a pretty good situation. Like I'm sure Justin Fields is like, where were all these weapons when you drafted me? You know what I mean? Like why didn't I get this opportunity to play with these guys? You would think that they would want to try and stick around and make those picks for Caleb Williams to give him as much success as possible. Two other receivers they have going in the first round, Brian Thomas Jr., 14 to the Saints, and Xavier Worthy, number 18 to the Bengals. That would be interesting if you put Worthy on the other side of Jamar Chase, because we don't know what's going on with Boyd or T. Higgins. But what do you think about Thomas? I've heard a lot of people say he has massive home run ability.
Yeah, I mean, that's – dude, when I'm watching this LSU offense, I don't know how they didn't put up 70 every game between Jaden, Malik, and Brian Thomas. And obviously, like, until just lately, Brian Thomas Jr. wasn't talked about a lot. It was Malik Nabers and Jaden Daniels, and you watch them on film, and all of a sudden you see this other guy stand out. You're like, who the hell is this guy? And you just start doing like research and talking about it, and the size, the speed, the skill, just the straight line speed on these back shoulder fade routes that Jaden Daniels throws so well to him. I mean, he's throwing to two of the best receivers, in my opinion, in all of the FBS. And so Brian Thomas does have that home run threat. He's a lot better outside. I don't think he's going to be a slot guy at all. I think you want him at the X where he's singled, or the Z to the trips receiver side, where he can sort of stand out, beat these smaller corners one-on-one with his speed, his releases, all that. He looks to me like LSU's offense, first of all, is a very – I love their offense because it's very NFL friendly. Like I get it and I understand it when I'm watching this offense. And he does some things versus zone, versus these dagger routes that a lot of teams are throwing, where you don't want to just run in if it's Tampa 2 to this Mike linebacker and just get hit. Like he's got that feel in zone, which pro teams love to see, not only a home run threat, but if you can do that versus zone, you're going to be set up for success. And then the Xavier Worthy, man. Like I know his agent, and I know his agent told me straight up, he was like, look, Xavier Worthy, before he ran a 4.21, by the way, the fastest man in the world of the combine, okay, said just based on his film alone, he was going to be a number one pick. Just based on his film alone. And then he goes out, like a first round pick, not number one pick, a first round pick. And then he goes out, runs a 4.21. Like the dude, I would love to see him with the Chiefs. When the Chiefs want to draft, they want to draft speed. I don't know if they have enough draft capital to go get him. And not a lot of people are talking about his teammate either, Trey, right? Adonai Mitchell. Like, the dude is a baller. When you look at this Adonai offense, yeah, and you look at, like, what they're able to do in both of those guys, like, I would imagine that both Xavier Worthy and Adonai Mitchell will be going in the first-round pick. And when you look at these receivers from 1 to, like, 20, they're all, like, top 40, 50 pick talent. I don't know if that many are going to go, because there's obviously offensive tackles, some D tackles that are good. It's a deep quarterback draft. But this is the deepest receiver draft I've seen in a while.
Okay, so obviously the Chiefs have signed Hollywood Brown, but they're going to need to get at least one or two more receivers. We've seen sort of the wide receiver market in free agency sort of dry up. Josh Reynolds just signed with the Broncos. We talked about Mike Williams. He went to the Jets. Is there a veteran wide receiver out there that the Chiefs can look at? What about Odell Beckham Jr.? What about Tyler Boyd? What are we hearing?
OBJ,
what
do you think about either one of those situations? Does not make sense with the culture that the Kansas City Chiefs have. They won last year with no true number one. Their number one true receiver other than Travis Kelce was a rookie, Rashee Rice, balled out. I think they like where Rashee Rice is right now. I think with OBJ, it's just you bring a little bit too much. And if you look at actually what he's put on tape, it hasn't been great, right? It really hasn't been great. And then you bring the outside distractions, all that stuff, and everything. Like, the outside distraction is not me saying he's not an amazing teammate, because I've actually heard he's a great teammate. But with the signing of that, all those superstars already they got with Kelce and Mahomes. Like, I just don't think it makes sense right now for that. Can you get Tyler Boyd? Can you get T. Higgins in a trade? I don't know. Like, I just don't know. I think the Chiefs might be set with Hollywood Brown, and then they have the 32nd pick. They have 2 fifth-rounders. They have a little bit of ammunition to move up earlier in the first round. Are they going to do it? I don't know what they're thinking, but it sure seems like they're pretty set on a receiver room right now that includes Hollywood Brown potentially becoming the number one or number two, depending on how they view Rashee Rice, with Travis Kelce coming back another year, and then obviously a high round draft pick. That's who they need to draft. They need to draft a receiver in that first round. It's just, how do they feel about it?
Yeah, the other thing we should point out as this is being taped, Josh, Jadeveon Clowney just signed a 2-year deal with the Carolina Panthers. The Jets had a really good visit. And they thought they had potential possibility, but they gave him $24 million, the Panthers did. And also, he's from South Carolina, which is not too far away from where the Panthers obviously play and work out. So that's understandable. Okay, so we'll see what happens with those few remaining free agents that are out there. But we have to sort of finish up with Deion Sanders once again. Deion Sanders basically was talking about his sons and Travis Hunter at Colorado and where he wants them to play in the NFL a little while ago. And he said, you know, I don't want them to play in cold weather. We have to factor those things. And we astutely pointed out, what an interesting thing to say from a head coach who plays in Boulder, Colorado. It's just, really, you're telling your recruits you probably shouldn't come here because it's cold, which I thought was a fascinating way to get people, but whatever. Hilarious. That's a separate issue. And now Deion, in an article at The Athletic, analyzing with both Shedeur Sanders, his son, and Travis Hunter. He says, certain cities, that ain't going to happen. It's going to be an Eli. And for those that don't know what he's referring to, in the 2004 draft, Eli Manning made it perfectly clear he didn't want to play for the Chargers. They drafted him anyway, and he had that cheese-eating grin of holding up the jersey. And lo and behold, not too much longer, the Chargers and Giants made the trade, and Eli went to the New York Giants and became a pseudo-New York legend with 2 Super Bowl wins over Tom Brady. All that being said, how much of this is just pure bluster from Deion Sanders, and how much do we think he actually can impact things by saying this?
Well, the whole
Eli situation. Yeah.
Well, I just go by facts. The whole Eli situation happened 4 separate times. It was Eli Manning, who's won 2 Super Bowls and amazing, Bo Jackson, and some other guys. I'm pretty sure John Elway forces.
John Elway did not want to go to Baltimore.
And you're talking about Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter. Like, nothing against them. But, like, I don't know if you have the capital to do that and to force your way. That's not how the NFL works. I understand what he's saying. And I understand there was actually talks about the presumptive number one pick, Caleb Williams, doing that. Correct. Not wanting to go to Chicago. And the whole RG3 comments, which I am so done with that. We talked about it last time. I'm not even going to talk about it again. But it doesn't make sense to me because, first of all, like, in the nicest of ways, like, I do think Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders are great players. I don't know if they're, like, generational type players. It's too early to tell. So, second of all, that's the first. And then, second of all, like, you're probably hurting teams from drafting them earlier because you don't want to have to deal with a freaking headache. And I get what Deion's saying. I get what he's trying to do. And I love the fact that he's trying to push the boundaries. I just don't know if, in today's society, that's going to work. I don't know if you can pressure NFL teams, because ultimately you end up hurting Shedeur, and you ultimately end up hurting Travis Hunter, who still are in college. And, you know, Shedeur came out the other day, I'm pretty sure, and said, like, hey, you know, I came back because I want to be the number one pick. Like, you got a lot to do in this upcoming draft to become the number one pick. Now, there's not a lot of good quarterbacks coming out next year, but that's a whole different story. And are you the first or second, third overall pick? Maybe you can pull that power play then. But if you're down in the middle of the first round or back of the first round, I just don't know, Trey. I don't get it.
Well, first of all, Deion, in one of his reasons for this, said, well, you know, I talk to people in the league. You think I don't know people? I talk to so-and-so. I talk to Jerry Jones. Well, okay, you talk to Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones hasn't been in a conference championship game since you played with him, Deion. So I'm not sure saying you're talking to Jerry Jones is really going to be an indication of people saying, oh, clearly he has an inside feed here to what people are thinking. And I'm just going to throw this out there. Tom Brady, greatest quarterback of all time. Where'd he play? New England, cold weather. current greatest quarterback playing and will soon eventually be the greatest quarterback of all time, Patrick Mahomes. I just played in the third coldest game in the history of the NFL in a playoff game at Arrowhead against the Kansas City Chiefs. If you're great, cold weather won't bother you, okay? It will not bother you. Josh Allen, great in Buffalo. Aaron Rodgers, great in Green Bay, and he came from California. So I just stop it. Just stop it. And Dion, I love you, and I think you're great, and I hope you have great success with the Colorado program. But I don't think you have the pull you think you have here.
Yeah.
Okay. To your point, Caleb, were Caleb Williams representatives at one point talking about ownership of the team? Wasn't that part of it?
I mean, everyone was his father. Never happened.
Yeah. It's never happening. Okay. So you can put it out there. Cool. It is never happening. And all these things that Dean is talking about are probably never going to happen.
No.
They're never going to happen. So I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, not the best. You're winning the headlines, but I don't know if you're necessarily going to win the argument.
Speaking of headlines and winning the argument, I have this, my friend, from you on Twitter. So for all you Bitcoin people out there, what's a realistic number that I could hit this year? Asking for a friend. What, you didn't make enough money for 9 touchdown passes?
Oh my gosh.
I
got in at a good price. And I'm just seeing, when should I sell this thing and make a little bit of profit, reinvest the earnings somewhere else, maybe some actual real estate where I can touch and feel it brick and mortar versus like Bitcoin, which is so volatile. But dude, it's like, have you seen it? It's like $72,000. It just hit a high. And there, do you own Bitcoin?
Zero.
Okay. So quick, I just learned a little bit about Bitcoin where there's this halving, so it halves the actual supply, and so
to be clear, the thing that doesn't exist gets halved.
Yeah,
it doesn't really exist.
Yeah. It makes all the sense in the world, right? Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And I suppose it's supposed to happen April 30th or April 31st, and it's supposed to skyrocket. So that's what I'm thinking about selling some of it.
All right, so we're gonna stick a pin in this conversation, and we'll come back to it after the draft for the show and see what happened to Bitcoin on April 30th.
All right. Let's go.
I think that's a perfect way to end this show. I wish you all the best of, in the same way I wish Dion all the best of luck in his endeavors. Yeah. I wish you all the best of luck in your endeavors with Bitcoin.